Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sack and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm very, very honored to have my guests. But first, I want to welcome Lori back.
Hello.
She has
Happy New Year.
Are you on three?
Hello.
There you are.
There you are.
Two amazing guitarists and bassists from the original Wrecking Crew, and both Don Peek, who's been on my show. It's great to have you back.
Thank you.
And I'm very honored to have Chuck Berghofer on. It's really an honor to have you here.
Well, thank you.
And thank you, Lori, for bringing him in. But
yes,
what they're doing, what we're going to talk about tonight is another amazing guitar player and musician, Glenn Campbell. And what they are doing is they are doing a benefit concert for the Wrecking Crew, Farewell to Glenn Campbell. And it's to help the proceeds from it go to the Alzheimer's Association. And if I'm correct, it's www.alz.org. And also the it's just to help the family out and stuff. And he was a big influence on me, I know for sure. So, but before we start talking about Glenn, I'm going to let Lori give the information about the concert because it's a worthwhile thing to go to.
Sure. So the name of the show is The Wrecking Crew's Farewell to Glenn Campbell, and it's basically a commemorative concert with all stars, singers and band members, and we've got, together with these great guys, we've also got Don Randy, so three of the original members of the Wrecking Crew, together with some other wonderfully talented band members and star singers who will be performing actually two shows, a 6 o'clock and an 8 o'clock. And the 6 o'clock is already sold out. This 8 o'clock is almost... we did the show back in August. It's a multimedia show where we feature clips, film clips, and different slides from the show, and kind of navigate through some of Glenn's songs and some other songs by the Wrecking Crew. And it was just a great old time. Everybody loved it so much. Don and I talked afterwards and said, we just have to keep doing this. It's beautiful. So I went to the Alzheimer's Association and just tried to like tie in some additional meaning with giving back some of the proceeds to from the show to the Alzheimer's Association, which does research, and they actually worked with Glenn in his last year.
Oh, very good. Very, very good. And I think I mentioned, besides Don and Chuck...
The Dons, we say.
Yeah, Eric Ekstrand on keyboards.
Yes.
Now, George Green, it mentioned, he played with Glenn, right?
He played with Glenn. He was on the recording of... Help me out, Lori.
Southern Nights.
Southern Nights, thank you.
Southern Night.
Okay.
And Nights.
And Bill...
Nights.
Billy Hulting.
Billy Hulting, a percussionist.
Percussionist.
A fabulous player.
And Denny Tedesco, who did the Wrecking Crew movie. I'm wearing my shirt.
Yeah,
yes.
You got to turn around and show that emblem there.
Yeah. There it is.
Close
there
up,
is.
Please.
So, the anyway, he's going to be there. And then also the vocalist, Lamont Dozier Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not too shabby.
Doesn't
Marty
get
Ross.
Any better, right?
Gary Stockdale has been on the show. And,
yes.
And Kiki Epson.
Yes.
So, it's a pretty...
And we just added John... The guitar player we just added today.
Oh, John DePeat.
Yes, from Don Randy's band.
John.
Yes, because the sound that the Wrecking Crew made was a multiple instrument sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, let's get another guitarist on stage so I can show him how to do the strum that we do and fill in. So, because, you know, sometimes there were five of us
mm-hmm.
playing, and I can't do all the parts at once.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be fantastic. It's going to be amazing.
Well, let's go ahead and start. My first question to both of you guys.
I'm sorry, I want to interrupt you before you
okay,
start.
Go ahead.
He has to tell
Besides.
Jeff. Huh? Sorry.
Before we start, as they used to say in Compton, before we go another further, besides the fact that we want to benefit Alzheimer's research, because we do, and besides the fact that we, you know, we love Glenn. Glenn was our bandmate. He was our friend long before he stepped up and said, there was a session, you know, Don Randy will tell the story where, you know, we were at a session and the singer didn't show up. And Glenn said, I think I can do that song. And he sang it and everybody went, oh my God. And that was the launch, you know, but we started out playing together. We were just guys together. So one of the reasons I like to do this is because I like to play. And I like to play these songs. I love these songs. And I still remember, you know, all the Al DeLore writing the wonderful string arrangements. And Chuck gets to do his, maybe he'll do his Boots Are Made for Walking lick on the show for us. Who knows? And his Barney Miller theme that he wrote. So it's all also about us getting together, the Wrecking mm-hmm. Crew, and celebrating the camaraderie and the love that we have for each other. And so it isn't just about, you know, doing a show. It's about us hanging out.
Yeah.
And there's also just these terrific stories that you can't, this doesn't happen any other way. Like, even just here, you will probably hear some things. And Don Randy's just, he loves to tell stories anyway, and he wrote his book. And there's just great stuff that happens organically on that stage. It's really special. And kind of the icing on the cake has been having this kind of star turn of just stellar singers that just interpret the songs, and every one is a moment. It's beautiful. Yeah.
So let's talk about Lamont Dozier Jr.
Yeah.
We are all of an age where we know who Holland Dozier Holland was. Berry Gordy liked his writers to write in threes.
Come closer.
Hello.
Yeah. That's
good.
Otherwise, I gotta move this.
So Lamont Dozier Jr. grew up in Detroit with his dad writing these. They wrote 25 hit songs for Motown. It was unbelievable. And one night they're sitting on the couch, and it's Jackie Gleason and the Honeymooners. And they're sitting there, and Jackie Gleason shakes the dice and throws them on the table and hits Snake Eyes, whatever he hit, he won. And he says, how sweet it is. And Lamont Dozier looks at his wife and says, I'm going to write a song about that for Marvin. So that's how these things happen. This is American history. We, the Americans, have contributed to the world a whole culture. So Holland Dozier Holland, or HDH, as they were called in Detroit, you know, so Lamont is the son of you know, Lamont Dozier Sr.
Yeah.
But he's not just a guy who sings. He's royalty. He's music royalty. And it's important to know that.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But he is a stellar singer.
Oh, he's a killer.
An interpreter.
Killer.
I mean, just... Oh, I just love it.
Well, let me start out. I'm going to throw this question out. When did you first meet Glenn? If you guys can remember that, start either one.
I think Chuck should start because he's way older than I am. He was at the sessions before I was.
Well, I guess I was a little bit, but I started with the Wrecking Crew before I did Boots Are Made for Walking in 65, I think it was, or 6, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. So about 64, I was doing some dates already, and that's when I met Glenn. And he was just a guitar player, no big name, no nothing, you know, just there he was. He was just a But he always sounded so great. And then I find out that he can't even read music. He'd hear something one time, and he was Buddy Rich. Buddy Rich couldn't read music either.
Hmm.
He wound up listening to the band one time and play it, you know.
Yeah.
And Glenn was very similar to that. Anyway, he'd get it right away. And he really impressed me because I was still a jazz player. Like a lot of the guys that did this were jazz players originally. And you get into making some money doing this, so
mm-hmm.
did that. And Glenn was like, it really blew me away. And his playing in his ear. And so at that time, that's before he was a big deal, you know. And then I told the story before we started to you, but one night we went to a bar afterwards having a beer, and Glenn says, "I got $10,000 saved up." And I said, "Holy Christ." And that was a lot of money then, you know. So after that, I'd see him because I did his show and all that stuff, and he took off and he made millions of dollars. And every time I'd see him, I'd say, "Do you still have that $10,000?"
That's right.
Yeah. But he was a wonderful guy.
When he was in those sessions, and would somebody like Don play the changes for him so that he figured it out? Or would he just go through it, or would the band just...
No, he'd hear what was going on. And there was like four or five, six guitar players, too, and he'd figure out what he had to do, basically like that. And mm-hmm. it was mainly a chord symbols anyway.
Yeah, but we would do a run-through, and he would hear it one time, and that'd be it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But you told me something tonight that I didn't know, which was that Glenn showed up at Dante's, which was the jazz hang,
mm-hmm.
and sat in?
Well, I took him in there. He was so good. So we went in there, and Glenn Campbell, why not? Boom. And we played bebop all night.
And where was that?
It was a place called Dante's. It was a famous jazz club.
It was a big
club. In Hollywood or something?
Lancaster Boulevard in North Hollywood, yeah.
It was a big club back in the day.
I mean, everyone worked there. I actually opened the place myself with Pete Jolly.
God bless him.
Well, that's another story. Pete Jolly. Spent 44 years with him. But people say, "What university did you go to?" And I said, "The University of Pete Jolly, piano player. Right.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
But I took Glenn in there. And he sounded, he still had a little country thing, jazz-wise, but, God, he sounded so great, and people loved him. But that's before he was known, too, mm-hmm. So, I mean, we wouldn't be able to pay him enough to do it now,
No.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Would he be brought in to do the fills, or would he just be brought in like normal, like a gig you would do, where you'd play everything, rhythm, lead?
He would be brought in to play guitar. And then at the session, we would figure out amongst us he would come up with something. We'd be playing along, and he would go, dee-da-loo-da-loo-da, and the producer would say, "Yeah, do that. So it wasn't like that the part said guitar one, guitar three, It was like amongst us, we would figure it out. You'd have one guy, you'd have a G chord, and he'd be, and I would go like a... And, Don Randy would turn around and say, "Yeah, do that. So we would just make stuff up. As you say, a lot of times it was the chord symbols, the letter C, some slash marks, and the letter G. And
sometimes, remember numbers?
Yes. Oh, Nashville.
That's the thing. He was brought up, he came from Nashville, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he used that system, didn't he? Which, I mean, what kills me is their string players back then would do head charts.
Yes.
Where they would do that. You just give them the 1, 4, 5, whatever the setup, and they actually did all the part. That blows me away.
Yeah.
Well, and they would do it like that.
Well, it's like background vocalists. You guys, I know that Lori can sit there, and if I'm playing,
Fine parts.
And you'll, three of you... We'll harmonize
you're
that.
Fine. Yeah,
and
fine.
Now
exactly.
The end is near. No, I'm kidding.
I didn't know you sang.
I was thinking it was Chain Gang.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah. And we also, Chuck and I discovered at one of our rehearsals for the last show that we're both Geminis. And we looked around the room and there were a bunch of Geminis in the room. It was very weird.
Well,
It was twice as many Geminis, right?
Yes, yes, yes. You had to pay extra for the I just put something up on Facebook. People send me stuff, and I got this, and this was a therapeutic. I showed it to you today.
Yeah.
It was the
ego
the
thing?
Institute for the Cure. It was like the Institute for Therapy about Narcissism. And then there's an arrow. It said, please take a number. And you look at the machine, they're all number one.
One.
It's funny when you mention Geminis, a quick story. 1960, I opened Shelley's Manhole with Shelley Mann, and he was a Gemini.
I didn't know that.
Much later on, Pete Jolly, we made an album with a trio with Shelley and Pete, and we called it Gemini 3 because Pete's a Gemini.
Oh my God.
So we called it Gemini 3.
And Bob Dylan and a lot of other. Wow.
Isn't there like a spaceship by that name?
Maybe.
There was.
Well, the Gemini,
Closest thing to that is my father is born June 14th, 19. I forget the year, and I'm born on June 14th.
Wow. Flag Day.
I was actually
that's Flag Day.
That's right, but I was born on his birthday.
That's amazing.
Which is kind of
wild.
So I never had to get him a birthday present.
You were his birthday present.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm June 7th, and my Judy is June 12th.
Mm.
So it's like they're everywhere.
All in 1 week.
Yeah. Well, my wife's June 10th.
Not.
Yeah. And I'm June 14th.
My God.
Yeah.
Well, amazing. You see that? We need a hell of a big birthday cake. We should have a party.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Anyway, the. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. The standard session would be three guitarists or four?
Depending on the song.
Because part of the sound, which a lot of newer guys, because a lot of people we record in our houses and stuff and we're doing stuff, but a lot of that sound was the room of all those instruments. And how many bass players, I mean, there would be you playing upright and then maybe Carol Kay playing electric.
Not maybe, it was Carol Kay most of the time.
But I mean, did you have more than that? Like what, for example, like a Phil Spector thing where you'd have more basses?
No.
Would just be the two?
Yeah.
And that would be enough?
Unless they had a big orchestra and they might have a couple of basses playing arco with the cellos and all that.
Oh, okay.
No, it was just basically that.
So, and then... How did that work? I mean, I'm trying to get so people understand why they did that. So using the electric bass with the upright bass.
Well, the way it worked, it was funny. I'm not sure if I was one of the originals that wound up doing that, but when I first did it, they loved the sound so much they kept it up, but it was always with Carol. But she played with a pick. And so it gave an edge to the sound.
Right.
And the string bass gave this bottom to it, which nowadays they get with the synthesizer, you know. But,
no, there's, almost, there's still nothing like the real thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, when Carol did that, I think I read an interview where she did the riff for the bass at the beginning of Wichita Lyman. Would you double that?
No, no. I don't know if I was even on that, but I don't remember.
But if she was doing like a riff because she was,
Then I would, I would start after the boom.
You wouldn't follow.
The
only things I really played on a lot of were things that were very simple. Boom, 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 you know. Did that all day long.
Okay.
Then I went to Dante's and played jazz. No.
Yes, that's right.
But I'm not complaining, believe me.
So you got paid by the note then.
Just about.
Yes.
Pretty much. Or like Tommy Tedesco said, all your money's in the first five frets.
Yes, yeah. He's right.
Oh, Tedesco. That's another story.
God bless him. Yeah. So we're at the session, and I'm a new guy. I was in England, third year with the Everly Brothers, 63. And... we're on stage, Don and Phil, I'm lead guitar, Joey Page is playing bass, Jim Gordon's playing drums, and Don Everly, in front of thousands of people, says, I can't do this, and walks off the stage. And we all just were like, what? This didn't really just happen. And we went into the dressing room, and Phil said, listen, we got to finish, we got two more weeks on this tour, Joey, can you sing? And Joey Page said, I can sing. Phil said, well, please sing the melodies because I don't know the melodies.
Wow.
And so we finished the tour. We came back to L.A. Phil Spector started hiring me, and I started showing up at these sessions. And pretty soon, you know, we were doing dates. And one day we're in the studio. Tom Tedesco was there. We're at Western Recorders. And I think Bill Pittman was there. And the producer comes out. I had a Fender Telecaster. That's all I had. It was actually a Broadcaster. And the producer said, okay, Don, on this next song, I want you to play 12-string. And I said, okay. In the meantime, I'm, you know, panicking. Tedesco put his finger to his lips and said, don't say anything. We took a break. He took me out. There's an alley between Western Recorders and, okay, United and Western. And Tedesco had his big Cadillac parked there. And he goes back and he opens the trunk, and lined up like cordwood are a bunch of guitars. And he pulls out a 12-string and he hands it to me and he goes, shh. And that was it. He saved me and took me in to the studio, and I played the 12-string. And it was like, you know, because all I had was my Fender Telecaster. So Tommy, and then this was when you could smoke on sessions.
Oh, yeah, they had ashtrays on the stand.
Oh, yeah, on the music stand. Yeah. And Tommy, one day the producer came out, I remember this, and we were doing like one of those dates where there's three, four, or five songs. And he said to Tommy, he said, you know, you can lay out on this one. We're not going to need you. And Tommy took out a cigarette lighter, and he lit the music on fire and held it while it burned.
Oh, he did so many things.
Well, I know that this we have to just take a little tangent real quick, because you were an eyewitness to the infamous when he was doing Michael Nesmith's album and he threw the guitar, right? So yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. That must have been
What I remember is we're on take 43 or something. It seemed like, we did quite a few takes. And it was all about the ending wasn't big enough. No, we've got to make the ending bigger. And went on and on, and quite a while. And finally we made a take, and Tom, I could tell he was getting bugged. So he finished the ending, and he took his axe and threw it at the wall. We weren't far, we were about 10 feet from the wall. Bang! And then that's it. Yeah. That's I don't it. Have that record, but it's on the record.
What is it? The Wichita Train Whistle. It was that orchestra album that they did.
I can't remember the name of it.
You can hear it. They can say, Tommy's crazy. Oh, Tommy's crazy.
Oh, I loved it. Actually, I wish I had that one thing. Wow. Just to hear. I remember it so well.
No, it's on the record. It's still there. I think it's called The Wichita Train Whistle by Michael Nesmith.
Wow.
One more thing Tommy did when another producer walked out. Now, Tommy had a switch on his guitar and on his amplifier called a producer switch. And this switch did absolutely nothing. Yeah. But the producer would say, listen, Tommy, could you adjust your sound a little bit? And he would reach behind the baffle, and you'd hear, click. And Tommy would say, here, how's this go? Say, that's it. It never changed.
Yeah, he had a fake knob.
A fake knob on his guitar that he could turn. So one day the producer comes out and says, listen, Tommy, I want you to lay out, don't play, between bar 8 and bar 20. And Tedesco pulled out a razor blade and cut bar 8 to bar 20 out of the music and dropped it on the floor.
Wow.
That's what Larry Nichtel used to do.
Yes.
Yeah, Tats at these bars, and he'd cut them out like that.
He'd cut them out.
Yeah. We were wild. Wow. We're still wild.
I can't believe I'm remembering some of this.
Yeah, no, one other story about Tommy. He mentioned, he used to, at the Musicians Institute, he would say, yeah, I went into the session, and there was a classical player, and they wanted him to play classical, and he wouldn't do it. The classical guy said, no, I'm busy, I can't do it. So they went up to Tom, and he goes, can you play classical? Sure. And he played this riff on his guitar with his pick. Mm-hmm. And then they said, okay, that's really good, but can you play this other type of samba or something? He played the same thing. Oh, that's great.
He could play anything and read anything. That was his thing. He was brought up in a place that he worked in a factory or something for a long time, and he just practiced. And by the time when it finally came time for him to have a chance, he could read anything. He had mm-hmm. this thing. And that really pushed him over the top. But just his brain was so different. He knew how to handle everything. You know, very wild. Really interesting guy. Now, miss him very much, by the way.
Let me ask.
Yeah, we miss him for sure.
Let me ask you, what was it like? You guys both did you do any of his album sessions, Glenn's?
I'm not sure. Yes, I did. I did. I saw my name on the back of one.
Okay,
of them.
And then so how was that any different than the typical Wrecking Crew session, or would it anything that you can think of, or was it?
I think it was. I don't remember doing it. It was. I could be proved wrong. I've just found out. Beach Boys album that somebody came up. Can you sign this? And it's a big. You know, I don't remember doing it. Anyway,
I know what you mean. those albums, if you listen to the early Glen Campbell records, it sounds like the Wrecking Crew. It sounds like business as usual. So we went in there and played just like we play. Later on, things changed, and there were some more countrified things. There were a banjo player that came in and things. By the way, we're featuring banjo on our show because there are a couple of songs on Glenn's, you know, Glenn's records that really need a banjo. And we had Eric Ekstrand is amazing, and he did it on the keyboard. But I said to Lori, let's get a real banjo player in here.
Yeah, so we're working on some special features for this show.
I remember him playing on the show.
Well, just make sure you put him away from the bass.
Do you know the definition of perfect pitch? Perfect pitch is when you throw a banjo into a dumpster and it lands on an accordion.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. I started on accordion now. You got to watch it.
Oh, so sorry. So sorry.
Dick Contino is going to come out of the grave and come after you.
Oh, yeah, that's how he left one of them in his car, and they got back. There was two of them in there.
That's
right. Yeah. Okay.
Don't say that.
Now, let me ask you a little bit. Did you guys both work on the TV series?
No.
I did. Yeah,
oh, Chuck did.
I did.
Well, let me ask you about that. How was that? I mean, with the
great.
Any memorable like guests that you had with him?
Oh, I'm sure there were, but we were downstairs, they were up on the stage, and fairly large orchestra downstairs, a big band and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he come down, the day that was Marty Page was the conductor, and he come down and we rehearsed downstairs, and it was always fun. And then he'd go up, and then we'd hear him on the headset, and basically then. But as far as, half the time, I could never see the screen, so I didn't even know who was up there half the time. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. Who's playing now? And somebody's up.
So they would just conduct, he would just conduct you watching the monitor.
Well, but Marty would watch the monitor and be up there and listen to them, whatever, and he conduct and we'd follow them.
Right, you just
and we could hear them too, of course.
But remember, in popular music, usually once there's a count off, the tempo is probably going to stay the same.
Yeah.
So conducting becomes bringing you in and out of your part, but not changing the tempo like in a classical or in a film score where the conductor might do a retard.
Oh, that's
something.
A whole other thing. Yeah.
But depending, but some of the guests wouldn't they hang on a note or something like that?
Oh yeah, that was all
So you had to follow that.
That's a fermata.
You would. But it's interesting that they did that. I didn't know that you were downstairs. I'm trying to remember. Yeah. I never did see the band. I thought you guys were to the side.
Well, they had another band upstairs. I mean, they got in his little group, but we were downstairs playing all the. I played electric bass and string bass on that, and so I can't even, that's what we
So
did.
When would the little band play?
They'd do things just by themselves.
Oh,
it didn't have the order.
Like, I remember he'd come out and he would play something at the beginning.
Yeah.
And usually he would play something where he played guitar.
Yeah.
Not just sing. And then he would sing later with their strings and stuff.
And that's what, when we...
You guys would play.
So they played a lot of stuff by themselves, too.
Oh, okay. And that was like his regular little band that toured?
In fact, I think so. It was interesting because I did that show about 3 years, four, I can't remember how many, and it was a wonderful opportunity. And then I get a call from the guys coming out from New York to do Carol Burnett's show. And I worked with Herb Ellis at Dante's that night that I got the call. And I said to Herb, I don't know what to do. I said, they called me to do this new show, Carol Burnett, and I'm already doing Glen Campbell. I don't know what. He says, take Carol Burnett. It's just starting. You've been doing that one for 3 years.
Interesting.
What, 9 more years with Carol Burnett.
Oh,
that was a great show. That was wonderful.
Wow.
And she just got that award. Yeah. The Golden Globe. They started an award for her, I guess. She's the recipient of her own award.
Yeah. Wow.
And that show lasted 11 years. I didn't remember.
Altogether.
Those were my
it was
favorite
nine
shows
after
as
they.
A kid.
I did nine of them.
Yeah, amazing.
It was wonderful. It was
incredible show.
Funny.
So for Glenn's show, you just have one rehearsal? Like with the different artists?
Yeah, we went the night before.
The night before?
Yeah.
So they'd bring the artist in if you were doing all the charts?
Yeah. And did all that stuff. And then the next day it was a...
You just did it.
And we did a couple. You do two shows because then they'd use one of them. One of them was like a rehearsal and the other one was the show.
Oh, actually?
So it'd be three.
They would go through the whole show or just the
song? Yeah, the whole thing.
No. Really?
Yeah. Then they use parts out of both of them. They did that with Carol Burnett too. The same thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Safety. Never knew that.
Safety, yeah. Well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of that being downstairs. I've never,
well, if you look at them at the Academy Awards, the orchestra is beneath the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can see
or at Capitol sometimes.
Yeah, or at Capitol. Yeah.
But, I mean, you could see them, but I never – that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And the same with the opera.
You know,
the orchestra, the orchestra's tucked in, and you just have the prompter, the guy that's up there.
Yeah.
And then you have on the Barry White tour that I was on, and we did all those hits for Barry White, every original hit. And Barry loved us, and we loved Barry. And now he has his manager, who is not a musician, up on stage. He's wearing a white tuxedo, and he's going to conduct us. And we're doing this long song, and there's a vamp. And, you know, you've got like maybe 16 bars over and over. And he's facing us. We're facing the audience. And he's going, he's conducting, and he's going, "Where are we?" It was wonderful.
That's when the concert master comes in and saves the day.
That's it.
The let me ask you this. Talking about Glenn's playing, what do you think was the impact? Because he definitely, all these sessions that he did, and a lot of them not credited for, he definitely impacted today's guitar playing and music today. Give me your opinions, if you can, you think.
Not only a great voice, but a great songwriter also, mm-hmm. And a great presenter, the way he sang. It was just so natural. He even did that toward the end. You've seen shows that he did toward the end. Music stays with you. That's the last thing to go.
Right.
I've played with another autistic fellow, that incredible, great trombone player. Jesus, I'm bad, but I did a whole tour with him, and we had to lead him around. In Europe, we were.
He had autistic or Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's. And couldn't do anything until he started playing beautifully. And mm-hmm. So the music stays as the last thing to go.
It's the long-term versus short-term memory, I think. So.
Yeah, it probably is.
And they might not know who you are, like right in your face.
And Jan Barry from Jan and Dean. We were doing all those records together. We were really good friends. And then he had the crash. And his car was smashed. And his head was very badly injured. Mm. Remember, his father called me Bill Barry. He was one of the engineers for Howard Hughes on the Spruce Goose. And Mr. Barry called me over to the house. And here was the Corvette. And it was smashed. Mm. It was unbelievable. And Hal Blaine and I went to UCLA. And we sat in the waiting room for like 3 months. We would go like every other day or every day to wait for Jan Barry to come out of the coma. And when he woke up, he looked at me and said, "Music."
Hmm.
And he wanted me to bring a score. And I brought a music score. And he could like figure out the score, even though he couldn't remember medical school.
No, music to a different side of the brain.
Yeah. And he was brilliant. People might not know, but he was the one that did a lot of the arrangements.
Oh, yes, he did.
And he worked with Brian Wilson, too. They both worked together.
Brilliant.
And, and it was the famous Dead Man's Curve.
Yes.
That's where he connected.
It was. That was prophetic, wasn't it?
Yeah, because that was written before all of that happened.
Yeah.
And they've changed the road now, so you can't, it's not as dangerous as it was. But that was a big thing. I remember that.
It was horrible.
Yeah. No, he was brilliant, but the Jan and Dean, great stuff.
Yeah.
But guitar-wise, what did Glenn do?
Oh, Glenn.
That was.
Well,
what sticks out for you?
Okay, Laurie and I were together today, looking at the show, looking at the songs, and we brought up a video of Glenn playing. What song was it? It was one of the new ones. It was one of the new ones, and you said,
"Oh, True Grit."
True Grit. And you said, "Here's a chance, Don, for you."
Oh yeah, because that particular version of it had that guitar solo.
Yeah, really long guitar solo, like three
on the
choruses.
Acoustic guitar too.
Yeah, and so Laurie says, "Hey, Don, here's a chance for you to shine." So I look at the video, and I look at Glenn, and he's burning it up. I mean,
and he was sitting there like
he played every note on the fretboard several times, and I said, "I can't do that." I said, "Glenn could do that." I said, "I'm not that kind of player. Let's get a banjo player and have the banjo solo." Mm-hmm. But when I watched him play, he was doing something which we used to call country swing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain pickers, you know, who know how to do that stuff. And that's not me. But I admire it, and that's what Glenn was doing.
Yeah, well, he could do that.
Yeah.
That was,
yeah.
So what did you say to me?
I said, let's get the banjo player to play a banjo solo.
Punchline. I always have to have a punchline.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about the gig. And how did you go about deciding what to play from his legacy?
Well, we started with the top five.
The hits.
Yeah, the top five, because those are the most memorable, and the people in the audience know the words.
Yeah.
The lyrics.
Phoenix, Rhinestone, Cowboy.
Sure.
Southern Nights was even maybe sixth place, would say.
Yeah.
And then we added some for this upcoming show. We added another four songs, I think.
Yeah. And
Everybody's Talking, which wasn't Harry Nilsson, that Glenn covered. So we thought that would be a cool one to
do. Glenn played the guitar on that?
No, he covered it.
Oh, he sang it.
He did his own version.
Oh, that's right. He did.
Yeah.
Ha ha. So we get to teach people.
Yeah. But more than that, it's a responsibility for us to really play those songs right, and really get them where they sound good. It's going to be a terrific show. I want to go.
Now, in Wichita lineman are you going to use
the bass guitar?
Six-string bass.
Yeah, the Fender six. Now, Carol had a Dan Electro six, which she used most of the time, and we would call it a Dano.
Right.
And Glenn
Bill
grabbed
Bill Pittman also. That's
yeah,
what I, he
Bill
played
Pittman.
A lot of it. Yeah.
And Glenn grabbed Carol's Dano and did the. But down an octave lower.
Yeah, it sounded a lot.
So I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it an octave lower. Yeah, wow. I got a text from Joe Robinson, who's a wonderful, great, one of the greatest guitar players alive. And he said, Don, you killed Wichita Lineman. I was so happy.
Yeah, no, I
no,
didn't.
He meant you killed.
No,
no.
No, it's interesting, that sound, because I don't know. The Dan Electro, I think, came out before the Bass 6, the Fender.
Yeah.
There wasn't too many of those around.
No, there was about 20.
And that was that. I don't know if that was the bass they used, or they used a four-string for the Wild Wild West. That
I don't know.
Doom, doom,
oh,
doom,
they
doom,
used
doom,
a lot
doom,
of it.
Doom, doom,
that's sort of. I almost started with that, playing the string bass before Carol, with just that clicking.
Yeah,
underneath.
Yeah.
And you did that with a pick?
No. I mean, I played with them, and I added the bottom to it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I didn't do everything with Carol Kay, but I did a lot with Bill Pittman.
Because that was popular in the '60s. That type of bass sound,
exactly.
Yeah. The classic golden age of TV, The Man from Uncle, all of those shows had that stuff, Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Elmer Bernstein.
Yeah, that's true.
And Lalo.
So I should mention, Glenn played bass with the Beach Boys, not just guitar.
He did?
Yes.
Cool.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
I think as the story went, I've been reading Don's book, too, he reveals things, but I mean, as I understood, he was replacing Brian Wilson for some parts, and then he was playing bass on Pet Sounds.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I'm sure he could easily.
Well, that was the thing about Brian. He would have somebody else come in and finesse the part for him, and he was cool about that. It wasn't he was a true arranger. He wanted
exactly.
to get the best musician for the best part.
Exactly.
It's still that way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but he was, I remember that. But Glenn, what other things that we might not know did he play on? Do you what stands out to you? And then doing the music, what's your impression? I mean, going through and playing this repertoire, after playing it, what's your reaction to that? I mean, what are you coming out
with? I'm just saying these are really good songs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't just C, F, and G. These are really good songs. They're pieces of art, and it's such a pleasure to play them and to get to that next chord and get to that place where the bass goes down that one note and everything just takes off. The Jimmy Webb and all this.
Yeah, I was just going to say we have to mention Jimmy Webb when you're talking about the songwriting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he wrote for Glenn pretty much. The first one was Phoenix, and then Wichita Line. There was one, then the other.
I don't know.
But one led to the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Al DeLore was writing those amazing string parts. So, it's art.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's pop art, but it is art nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. No, it's the music is, his stuff is great. But I remember him playing stuff that he would do on his show, on the TV show, and he would do a lot of the, which has a jazz influence. He would do a lot of the chicken scratch type of stuff in there, or chicken picking. And he would, but he did a lot of jazz phrasing in there. You could hear it in there.
The way he sang, too. I mean, he was really, he had that natural feeling. Was there ever anything that.
Nothing forced.
Oh, he's easy, too. I mean, whatever he's doing is so complicated that just look, and you never look, and I went,
that. No, that's the sign of a real master.
Yeah.
They make it look easy. Mm. Tedesco was like that.
Yeah, that's true. But he was, I mean, it's just his technique and what he played, and it's people just don't realize how much, I presume Glenn did all the lead guitars and the Jan and Dean stuff, right? Was he on
Not necessarily. Mm. Tedesco did some of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know that, I don't think Glenn did all that.
Oh, okay.
I know he was on some of the sessions.
Because it's hard to tell. I mean, that's the thing. They didn't. It's hard to find out what he really had done. But he did a lot. I know that.
And
he
on the Monkees, the Monkees things that I arranged, one of them was Mary Mary. And there's a part that goes, I'm sorry. I believe that's Glenn. It's either Glenn or Mike Dacey. I think it's Glenn.
Who did the lead on Valerie?
I don't have no idea.
That's like one of the fastest things I've ever heard in my life. I know it was a guy. It was a big session guy.
Yeah,
but that Mary Mary, we had that. We have that clip in the show that was kind of talking about how the general population didn't know that, like, bands like the Monkees were not actually playing their own music.
Right.
And that, I mean, that was revolutionary.
Well,
that's
when it started coming out too. All that, Yeah.
No, there was a lot of people that used studio musicians that,
Well, there was the Funk Brothers, too, so, that was
That was much later,
He's not a Wrecking Crew member, but David Gilmour was talking about The Wall. There's a sequence thing that he does with the echo, and he hired Rittenour to do that because he couldn't keep the tempo. He said, I could never keep it straight, so I just called him in and just do that, fine, boom, and he just, like, knocked it out. So, I mean, it was a big shock to a lot of people that they were all playing on the same hits.
Sometime when you have a moment, go back and look at the YouTube video of the Jackson 5. I played on all those original hits, and I'm the guitar that doubled the bass line with Wilton Felder. I'm the... Let me turn it up a little bit. And then David T. Anyway, you watch the video. The J5 are jumping around. They're playing
with
our
their
tape.
Instruments.
They're playing our tape on the video. Yeah. You can see it clearly. And the Monkees, we got on the stage, boy. One night they hired us to come and play for the Monkees. And they had a scrim, a kind of a translucent curtain lowered. So you couldn't see us on the stage behind the Monkees. And I called over Ben Barrett, the contractor, and I said, never again. I said, I won't do this.
Speaking of that, did you play with the Eberle Brothers ever?
But say that again, sorry.
The Eberle Brothers?
I played for 3 years with the Eberle Brothers.
No, I did a lot of recording with them. I forgot.
I was not recording with them, but I did play on tour with them for
bunch of stuff.
Almost
they were
years.
Always fighting.
Yes.
That's why I said,
Yeah, and that's how I got started with Phil Spector.
Yeah.
Because when the Eberles broke up, I came back to L.A. And then we did...
How to fit that one in. On the other guitar, of course.
Yeah, on the L5.
On the L5. Well, you're talking about the Monkees. I remember an interview where Mickey Dolenz said, I was an actor hired to do a part. That's how he never considered himself a musician, even though he... learned, I think.
Yeah, he learned how to play drums.
Learned to play drums, yeah.
So,
and he really played.
No, Mike Nesmith is a real guy. Mike Nesmith is an arranger, composer, good guitar player.
Peter Tork, too, was a player. He was a folk.
Yeah.
He and Stephen Stills were big friends.
Yeah.
And played. So they were musicians coming in for the part. But Nesmith, I knew, was a big musician.
Yeah, we worked together a lot.
He's a great musician.
Terrific.
But who did the... Did Glenn do the guitar for Last Train to Clarksville?
I wasn't there, so I don't know.
I'm wondering, because that would be that... it could have been Tommy, too. He was in those sessions.
I'm not sure who did it.
But it was interesting. I mean, a lot of that stuff.
Excuse me for interrupting. I think it was Louis Shelton.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said I did that. I remember seeing him on an interview somewhere.
No, because that's a classic line, but that tone, too.
Yeah. Now, when I want you back, Louis Shelton, it was me, Louis Shelton, David T. Walker.
Mm-hmm.
And so Louis' part was octave A-flat. And what he did was he started the record. He with the... That's Louis. And that was me, you know. And then David did the... Now, David T. improvised that. I was reading my part.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to learn how to read.
Wow, that was, I didn't realize you did that, though.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Were a lot of your, on those type of sessions, was your stuff written out, or was it more chord charts?
The notes were written out quite often.
Really?
Simple stuff, though. It wasn't complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And chord charts sometimes, a lot of that too. Both.
And sometimes...
Nothing.
The maestro came in with a boombox, which he plopped on the floor in the middle of all of us and said, here's the song, guys, and pushed play.
Yeah.
And we had to learn it from hearing.
We had to figure it out.
Write your notes.
Blank piece of paper and a pencil, and we would write our parts.
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That was...
Yeah, definitely the influence of the Wrecking Crew in terms of more than just the playing of the instruments were the arrangements, you know, just the different things that you did that became the hook for the song. We're almost out of time.
Wow.
Darn
I told you it'd go by fast.
Darn it.
I have to hear that famous bass line.
Oh, Chuck, get it.
Well, let's see if I can still stand up.
Oh.
Let's see.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will narrate this as
if you
Chuck
want to,
Berghofer.
You can go ahead and take those headphones off because you're going to be playing acoustically.
Okay. Yeah.
Chuck Berghofer, take his beautiful upright bass, which he has brought. It was made in Germany hundreds of years ago.
France. Yeah, this is French.
Oh, I should have
known.
No,
it's Italian, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's Italian.
This is Italian. I've got one from every country.
Exactly. And here...
Well, this was... I've told the story real quickly. This bass was Joe Mondragon's bass, and it was on a tune that...
Fever.
On Fever with Peggy Lee, Joe Mondragon was.
No, so Chuck, tell us about the session for Boots, because the original part on your part for Boots wasn't what you did.
No, well, it was a little different. It was a kind of a thing. It was actually a little bit of a short version of shorter version of that. And I've got a tape at home that says, take one, take two, go through seven takes. So anyway, it is, I can't believe it put me on the map forever, you know. Are you going to play with me? I'll do the opening part. Here we go. Ready?
And yes. Beautiful. Now, before we have you guys take us out, give the information for the concert.
Okay. So, Bogies is in Westlake Village, and the date of the show is the 27th, Sunday, the 27th of January. The 8 o'clock show, there should still be a few tickets left, and you can go to bogies-bar.com and go to the Eventbrite ticket link that you'll find on the calendar according to that date. If you miss it, Well, I'm sure we're going to do it again because we keep getting better at doing this, and it's for a great cause, and there's some beautiful talent that will be there. And thank you, Jeff, for helping us to promote and get word out.
Yeah, putting the show together.
Really excited about it.
You guys have to come back.
All right.
We got to have you come back.
We would love to.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so
take us out.
I'm going to do the pickups, and we'll hit on the B flat.
I don't remember what we're doing, but
we're
going to
do Just Friends.
Go ahead.
One, two, three.
Number one.
Yes.
Good night, everybody.